When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100 megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
If you can find the time to explore the mind of a stripper,
then you can find the time to spend with your actual family.
Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
Damn! What they on? All steroids and no carbs? Them some thick-ass kids.
This is Prime Time.
We're not like you. We're grown-ups.
Your source for the best in local, regional, and national sports.
Oh, my goodness!
Here are Isaac Ropp and Jason Sakanek with Prime Time on 1080 The Fan.
Psych, no Rop, no Souk. What you have is another SOB holiday edition of Primetime. Schultzy Ortner and myself, Ryan Buckley, here with you today. Our last live show here on The Fan until the 27th. The whole crew, all the shows, everybody going to be gone. National programming, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and the 26th. This show will be back on Friday, I believe, with Ortner and Rop.
Yep, it's me and Dusty and then me and Rop. It's an interesting day.
Klondike Will Ortner coming through when they need him. As always, we are glad that you are along with us today for this final live show before the holiday, and going to try something a little different today. I'm sure I'm not the first radio host or sports radio host to have tried this before, but we're going to observe the day of Festivus. It is the 23rd, of course, the holiday popularized by Seinfeld, and we are going to have a day of airing of sports grievances, both recent and throughout the year. We're also going to discuss some of our favorite feats of strength from the weekend that was in football, as well as the 2024 year as well. So it's going to be a Festivus episode of Primetime. Want you to join the conversation on the fan text line, 503-864-6326, as well as us on the YouTube channel at 1080 The Fan. So start sending those in, your sports grievances and your sports strength, feats of strength to get things going here. First thing I saw today, though, and I think we have to get into it right away. Someone likened it to the, you guys remember the news report about the Chinese flight that went down and the intern put up the graphics that said "We Too Low" and "Some Ting Wong"? Do you remember those?
Oh yeah, I do remember that.
My wife literally said those names as a joke in the car this morning. It is funny that you bring that up.
It's still in the lexicon, and it's not quite that, but someone's still probably getting fired over it. Today in the bowl game that just wrapped up, I couldn't even tell you which bowl game it was. I know that it was
the famous Idaho Potato Bowl.
There you go. We were just looking at that ugly spud at the conclusion of that game. But yeah, you had the Northern Illinois Huskies against the Fresno State Bulldogs. That is, if you believe the graphic, and it wasn't just a mistake on one graphic, it was a mistake on four or five different graphics that all said Bulldogs, Bulldogs touchdown, first down Bulldogs, Fresno State Bulldogs. Yeah, somebody.
Nope.
That feels intentional, yes?
That was clearly like a joke that someone put that they forgot to take out. Like, we've all written the joke in there to make someone laugh, and someone wasn't paying attention and just kind of quickly went through, and then all of a sudden you're giving a PowerPoint presentation to the entire class and you've got a couple cuss words in there. We've all been there.
We have all been there. I've had a couple unfortunate things like that that have happened either to me in school or in the workplace. One that comes to mind, I was writing a paper for a film class in college, and I had a buddy in my dorm who doctored the paper, and he... he slipped in some innuendos and some cuss words at the beginning, like in like the first two lines of the paper. And then I went the next day and I turned it in, and he's like, "Oh, you proofread that paper, right?" And I'm like, "Well, before I printed it off, I did." And he's like, "Well, when did you print it off?" And I told him, and then I went back and looked at it. He had doctored it since I had proofread it. I never proofread the hard copy of it, and I turned it in. I got it back with a large C minus the next week, and a couple phrases circled. WTF is this from the professor? I ended up dropping the class because I thought I would never recover from both the grade and the reputation of being the person that, even with my explanation, I didn't want to be the guy that turned in that paper. So I just I quietly bowed out.
In high school, did you guys ever have the thing where like you couldn't leave a computer open or your phone up with a Facebook or a Twitter or an Instagram because you were going to get something that got posted?
Yep. Absolutely.
That was a classic until all of a sudden one day someone posted something very not savory on a LinkedIn page. Mm-mm. And then that kind of all ended.
Which that is...
Might be crossing a line there.
Yeah, it's funny, but at the same time, there is kind of a personal line that I do feel like you are crossing. I don't want to poo-poo on anybody's fun time.
But it depends on the person, because like some people feel like totally like privacy invaded if someone takes over their account like that. Others are like, okay, that was actually pretty good. I worked with a guy who we had to we essentially had to share a computer station for like one of the jobs at the TV network.
Yeah.
And so someone stayed logged in there, and so their company email logged in, and somebody who took over the station from this person's email suggested that we get to a bunch of other coworkers that we get company tattoos together. But it made it seem like he was coming from this guy, and it was kind of written the way that this guy would talk. He's like, "I mean, I don't know. Sometimes you just got to say like whatever, man. Like I never think before I ink, so I think we should all just roll with it." And like people are like, "Is Ross serious about this NBC sports tattoo? Like what are we?" And then Ross found out, he actually thought it was funny, but other people would be like, "I would be so pissed if someone wrote an email for my account." So it all depends on the person, I suppose.
I think you got to let it go. Like for sure, young Will Ortner, high school age Will Ortner, early college Will Ortner would not have appreciated it and would have been mad and probably would have done something lame, like tried to fight you over it and just been dumb. Old Will Ortner, wiser Will Ortner, would totally be okay. That would be funny. Like even if it went out on like a Twitter, went out on Instagram, like it's fine. Like you're not gonna send anything too terrible. Just don't like dox me. If you dox me, then I'm gonna be upset. But if there's a tweet that fires out from Will Ortner's page that's like, "I've been a closeted Swiftie. I love Taylor Swift and all of her music, and I can't wait to be a part of it." No, one, it's fake, but two, that I would laugh about it and it would be funny.
And the last sports related one I had is that my very first job in sports TV was operating the ticker scroll on our and so a lot of it is automated. You just like schedule it as like, "Oh, include MLB scores, include NBA scores, include," but like if there's certain local news that applies to your network, you type that stuff in manually, like Buster Posey has a pulled hamstring, whatever.
Right.
So I had a friend, this didn't happen to me, but I had a friend who was training interns and young PAs on how to do this job. And he was showing them. And what you could do is you could schedule a ticker that wasn't actually supposed to run. You could build it, but just have it preview essentially on your station. And if you didn't have a certain box checked, it would not go out and be transmitted over the air. Well, he thought that he had not been checking this box. And so he was putting total bullcrap in these ticker like updates, assuming no one's ever going to see the light of day, and it's just going to be funny for the interns that he's training. Not so much. He accidentally ended up airing over the greater Bay Area that the Sharks had traded Joe Thornton back to the Boston Bruins. That had not happened. Additionally said that 49ers running back Frank Gore had cured the Ebola virus.
Oh, good one.
And the boss saw that stroll by. He was like, "Excuse, what are we running? What is this?" And then he had to explain, "Oh, it was a fake ticker that I was supposed to be doing." And they're like, "Why would you be running a fake ticker with fake news on a real TV?" Like, it was a thing. He did not lose his job, but he was certainly reprimanded.
Damn, that's one of the better ones. I mean,
that's fantastic.
Yeah, not misspelling anything, at least. Not any explicit words sneaking into that ticker, thank goodness.
Yeah, the other one that befell somebody was that we had a promotion with NFL Play 60. It was like, you know, they try to get kids out, like, to get 60 minutes of exercise or whatever. And there was a different copy that needed to be manually entered every week. And it was sign your child up to play flag football. And dude just forgot the L in flag football. And so, And it was 100% an earnest mistake. The kid was mortified. He was like shaking going into the boss's office. It was completely unintentional, but it got seen by like higher ups who were like on an airplane, and they were like, not pleased. You can't do that job anymore.
Fired.
Yeah, that one, that's a rough one. There's some good ones on the text line of my friend once left his Facebook open on my phone, and I updated his status to "I love sleeping naked in socks." Don't judge me for it.
That's debatable.
That's perfect
because it's right on the borderline. It's like, it's not, I mean, even if someone did think it was real, it wouldn't be the worst thing.
So no,
but it's fake enough that it's like,
harmless fun, because everyone also knows the guy who took it too far,
of course,
where came in and they fired off some words that, hey, shouldn't be said or can't be said, and then it's like, hey man, you're making me look like a piece of garbage. I'm not going to be thrilled that you did that. I don't like that. Whereas that's in good fun. That's a funny thing to tweet out. You can laugh that one off. I want to go back. I want to start doing this again.
No, please don't restart this. It's funny, but like I think we've moved past.
Well, the fan text line has told us that Dusty once left his Twitter open for Sook, and Sook sent out some Dusty tweets at some point. Dusty's probably on the road right now. If he has an anecdote there, we might have to circle back on this a little bit later in the show. A lot of fun stuff planned, though. As I mentioned, it is Festivus, so we will do an airing of sports grievances. Already some good ones coming in on the fan text line. Also, your favorite feats of strength this season. We need to talk about the college football playoff. That's one of the things that so many people are airing grievances about. Do we have nothing better to do? But now we have quarterfinals set. I think we have games that are going to be really good. We finally have a matchup for the Ducks. And there's a lot of other stuff going on in sports. We'll have in the news as well, bomb cyclone headed our way, an owl rescue, and where Portland ranks among best cities for Christmas. I didn't even know what that means until today. In the club.
We shouldn't be in the top 100. I just want that out there. Like, we shouldn't
be. I would agree.
There are so many, and I'm known for being a Grinch, there are so many places that are designed specifically for Christmas or holidays, like Leavenworth. That's all they're known for.
I actually want to go there, take my kids there. That place looks pretty magical.
I've never been. You can't book a room out there like the day before Christmas, the day before. That was my planning on trying to go to Leavenworth. Mm. So plan ahead.
Well, after the really crappy Santa Bar crawl I went to over the weekend, Portland is not a destination.
Oh, was it a SantaCon?
It was the one that started up at McMinniman's on 21st, and it was just not.
I'm not gonna. I need landmarks. You can't use streets with me. I'm not going to be able to figure it out.
Fred Meyer, Taco Bell, off of Burnside.
Those are not helpful either. There's Fred Meyer's and Taco Bell's
The big
everywhere.
Jim Fisher Volvo sign? I don't know, bro. Like, I'm like,
we went on different bar crawls. I had a great
90%
time.
Of our audience, if you're familiar with downtown Portland at all, knows where I'm talking about.
Okay, so I'm at the one by the old Voodoo, and I enjoyed that one. Now that one...
Well, I missed out on that one.
It was a good time.
Did the wrong one.
You guys need to combine Santa forces next year.
I know, seriously. We
combine like the Power Twins or whatever.
Will, you just got to tell me where your friends are going, and I'll book tickets there instead.
We never book the tickets; we just show up.
Oh, speaking of booking tickets, how was the Nutcracker, Schultz?
Oh, you know what? It was gorgeous. It was a beautiful show. And one thing I love about the Nutcracker, I think I mentioned this before I went, is it's like only 2 hours, including a 25-minute intermission.
Nice.
We showed up right at 7:30 when the show started, so got just enough time to get a drink, get our seats, and then have another drink at intermission. And yeah, we were there for literally 2 hours. I had one of the first Ubers away from the venue. It was glorious, and
beautiful.
It was just a beautiful Christmassy. Like, everybody was in a good mood. You love that.
Well, coming up in the club tonight, 'tis the season to beat up your dad. I've got a story from north of the border on
Watch
that.
Watch out, Tom.
Christmas traditions, yours, ours, the good, the bad, the ugly. Want to get into some of that with the fan text line as well. And there's a website that ranked the best food dishes in the world. Not cuisines, not restaurants, just the best dishes from all around the world. How could you do that, you would ask? Well, with over a quarter of a million votes on said dishes. So we will get into all of that coming up. But first, we need to start airing our grievances. It is the college football playoff round one recap. And boy, people are not happy. It's an SOB edition of Primetime here on 1080 The Fan.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. In fantasy football, sleepers can win you championships, and that's why I am here. Every episode is just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
Welcome back to a festive edition of Primetime. Merry Festivus to all. We're going to start getting into our airing of grievances, but before we get on to the grievances of the year, sports grievances, that is, the grievances of this last football week. I personally, listen, we got blowouts. We also got the first ever college football playoff on campus sites. There was a lot of buildup. There was a lot of drama. Despite the blowouts, I still had a pretty good time with it. But my God, people are coming out of the woodwork with how much they hated it, how wrong we all got it, how bad all these teams are, how stupid the selection committee is, how bad the bracket is, how bad the system is, and how bad the idiots commenting on social media are. My God, where do we start?
I want to start by kicking Lane Kiffin in the junk.
Yeah, good place to start.
Because Lane Kiffin sucks. He had the easiest schedule in the SEC, and you lost to a team in Kentucky that had one Power 4 win. You lost to an LSU team that had, what, four losses? They didn't look super awesome. And then you also lost to a Florida team, which I get it. At the end of the year, they were better. DJ Lagway is clearly a beast. They still had seven wins that year. You controlled your entire destiny, and you're just going to sit there and whine and bitch and moan when all you had to do was win one of those three football games, all of which you could have done.
We're a year removed from one loss effectively knocking teams out. Heck, teams with no losses being left out of a playoff. And now all you have to do is not lose three games and suddenly it's everyone else's fault? In no other year would you have a leg to stand on.
It's so dumb.
Here you are bitching in all your glory about how everyone else had it so, so wrong. And then, oh, by the way, the one team from your conference that did get in, they might have laid the biggest egg of all of them
they
in Tennessee.
They got boat raced. In the game that was supposed to be the closest and the best matchup and the one that everyone was looking forward to, and then you come out like, we're not afraid of the cold. Look at us. We're shirtless, which it was mean of the camera crew. They didn't show any of the Jack skill players. They went right to all the fatties. And as a former fatty, that's messed up. I just want that cameraman to know you're on the naughty list this year. But I was just sitting I was in here working a Pilots game, sitting on my phone when there were commercial breaks, just fuming, looking at Lane Kiffin's whole whining and complaining, because it's like, you had control. And no one has ever won more hypothetical battles than teams in the SEC. Alabama would have been undefeated, apparently, in the college football playoff. Ole Miss would have been undefeated. South Carolina, they were the hottest team in the country. No, here's the deal.
Do you know what all those teams have in common? Bad losses. Really all bad losses.
All of them. And all of a sudden, everyone wants to go back and say, well, South Carolina got screwed against LSU. I don't care. You lost. Put yourself in a position where the referees can't screw you over. I watched that game. There were some bad calls. They didn't hose you. That game was going to come down to the wire, and you let the ball be in the officials' hands. Stop LSU from scoring. Score more points. Those are all options.
And you know what? You can even lose to LSU, but don't lose to the other two games.
Right. Don't beat Alabama. You were close in that one, but you blew it. Don't get blown out by Ole Miss. Like, the more that I go through a lot of this, it's SEC teams that didn't take care of business that are then complaining because, well, the power rankings say this, or our conference is the toughest, so we're going to have more losses, or X, or Y, or Z. And you start looking through it, and it's, if you just take care of your business, Indiana had one of the easiest schedules in the country, but you know what they did? They took care of business.
Yes.
And they handled it on the field. And everyone starts complaining, well, the more teams you add into the playoffs, the more it takes away from the regular season. You want to start taking away from the regular season? Start kicking out the one-loss Indiana team.
Yeah.
Start kicking out the two-loss SMU team that only has a second loss because they played an extra game that you didn't play in.
Yep.
And start putting in teams like Ole Miss, and start putting in teams like Alabama, and then why even play the regular season? We should just create the playoff in August.
Yeah, you know what? I had this idea over the weekend, Will, because you're exactly right. I think that Kirk Herbstreit is a great football mind. I think he's a really sharp dude. I think he knows his X's and O's. I think he knows his way in and out of the game. He had the take this weekend that Indiana had no business in the playoff. Excuse me? Well, first of all, where was that take when they got into the field? Nobody had that issue. You can't have the issue after they lay the egg. And you know what? That's going to happen when you go on the road to a team that should have been ranked in the top four, but wasn't because they weren't a conference champion. Like, right. These things, this is not the fault of Indiana. Indiana dominated their schedule, and they lost by a couple scores to another team that looks like one of the favorites to win the college football playoff now, and they just lost. When you put the best 12 teams in, the ones at the bottom, at the back end, they might get blown out sometimes. That doesn't mean that Alabama should have been there or that Ole Miss should have been there. Right. That just means that team lost, or maybe you need to alter the system a little bit, either with the way that you seed or the way that you format or whatever, but it doesn't mean that you trash Indiana's whole season because they got boat raced by Notre Dame.
I think this is a case here of, like, the old blue blood, like, blue chip five-star program belief, you know, that these specific types of programs still need to be at the top of college football, like, are leaking into our current day festivities and our current day college football playoff system. How long has Kirk Herbstreit been on ESPN now? Like, we're talking, like, since, like, the late 90s, early 2000s, right? 25 years.
Yeah.
Obviously, Feinbaum. All those guys that have been deeply entrenched in college football have seen, you know, really crappy systems now to what I think is probably the best system that we're ever going to get.
It's at least the most inclusive.
Exactly, but they still can't get off of, like, when they were kids, like, oh, well, Alabama was always one of the best teams. Oh, Texas was always really good. Where's Texas A&M? And I just don't think there's ever a world where we're ever going to stop hearing about
it. And to Will's point, if everyone just wants to see the big brands play each other, you know what? Then let's do a preseason 12-team playoff tournament and say, hey, all the teams we really like the best, we'll make it like the Maui Invitational and just say, hey, these teams are all great. Let's have them all go play each other early in the season because that's what everybody wants to see. But you can't go through the season where you end up picking seeding based on merit and then blow the merit out of the equation and say, well, you know, this team that actually lost more is way better. It's not the way it works.
Well, and if you want to complain about things, complain about the fact that there are super conferences. So then there are situations for Indiana to have this type of schedule. And if you want to jump on Indiana, you then have to jump on Texas for their easy road. Guess what? You also have to jump on Ole Miss.
Yep.
Ole Miss had an easy road. Ole Miss, like, their second toughest game, I guess, is what, LSU? Like, that's who they played. You start going down the list. They played Georgia. That's their toughest game. They won that. But they didn't take care of business in the other games that they should have. So you're going to go through year after year because of these super conferences where there are teams that have easier schedules. It's just the way it's going to work when you have an 18-team conference. And so there are going to be teams that take advantage of it, just like Indiana did this year, and kudos to them. Because if you go through and you play the schedules that is laid out in front of you, you know who doesn't have a say in who they play? The players.
Yeah.
There's a little bit with the coach, but guess what? Even this coach, he just got hired this last year.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't have a say in who they played. So really, the only people in Indiana's top brass that had a say in who they played is like the athletic director and the school presidents, mm-hmm. or whoever goes through and helps through that system, an assistant AD, if you will. And so they just looked at the schedule out in front of them, and they took care of business. And that does make the games matter, because a lot of people want to jump in now and say, well, less games matter. And I'd make the exact opposite argument. There are more games that matter now than ever before.
Agreed.
Because years ago, that Oklahoma-Alabama game doesn't matter at all. Because mm-hmm. Alabama would already have been eliminated. They had two losses. But that Oklahoma and Alabama game now matter more than ever, because it was the difference between Alabama getting in and Alabama not.
Mm-hmm.
You look at that weekend, that second to last weekend in college football. There was an opportunity for the SEC to get South Carolina, Alabama, or Ole Miss in the playoff, because Indiana lost in the big nooner. And the minute that they got blown out, there was an opportunity there for the committee to say, hey, these teams have two losses, but when Indiana played a real team, they lost way worse, and Alabama has a Georgia win, and Ole Miss has a Georgia win, so how do we find a way to configure it so they can get in, or who do we like better, where you could have had that conversation. But instead of taking care of your business, you lost. You lost to Florida. You lost to Oklahoma, and now you're the reason that you're not in. But instead of looking inward upon yourself and saying, hey, there are things that I need to fix, you're blaming others for your issues. And I have a hard time with that.
I also have a hard time with the argument being, oh, well, they didn't beat anybody good. Well, you lost to teams that were bad. How is that any better? I don't understand, like, when you're like, Indiana didn't beat anybody. Well, you went and lost at home to Kentucky if you're Ole Miss. I don't get how one is necessarily better than the other.
Right.
It's why we have a committee. And frankly, everyone should be thankful that they even were in the conversation, as you said, with 2 weeks to go in the season.
Right.
Because in past years, there is no season like that. One fan, somebody on the fan text line weighing in saying that if there were no auto buys, Indiana would have ended up hosting Boise, likely win that game, and the narrative is totally different. Totally agree about that. Somebody else saying that with super conferences, you've got to reduce the non-conference games from 3 to 1. I don't know about that.
I don't know if it's possible.
Right, because there are too many. I mean, everybody, not everyone, a lot of teams, like Oregon, have a rivalry game that's not in conference anymore.
Well, and I don't even mean from that perspective. There are a lot of times when Oregon plays non-con, and I'm not even talking just about the FCS opponents here, but where they pay teams to come play them. And so what a lot of people don't realize, and I only have like a small little understanding of it because I got to take a class when I was in college about kind of the funding that goes through for college programs in general.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a big complaint about, well, why do these teams play the FCS teams? Well, it's actually kind of them working together. So Oregon will pay Idaho to come play them, right?
Right.
And they will pay them whatever it is, $1 million, let's say.
Sure.
That money that Idaho gets is factored in to their travel. It's factored in to costs for the program. And so what that game does is it helps make it easier for Idaho
to have
their season.
Yeah.
And then Idaho returns the favor because then Idaho will go play a Central Washington, a D2 team, or a Western Oregon, or insert whatever D2 team you want to put in here, or even possibly a lower tier FCS team. And so they'll play those teams. They'll pay them $250,000 or whatever to come play them and come catch the L. But what it's all a part of the college football ecosystem where the teams at the top are helping the teams at the lower level who are helping the teams at the lowest level.
Yep.
And here's the thing that people don't always understand either. That game that Oregon plays Boise State against, where Boise State comes to Oregon, Boise State gets paid too.
Yep.
And so you're all cycling through helping each other out. So those games are never truly going to go away.
Is that Ronald Reagan's trickle-down economics?
Maybe.
Possibly. It's like only in this ecosystem that it would work though, right?
Sure.
Because there's enough money to go around for everybody.
Right.
But it's one of those things where that's not going to go away. And now I'm a big proponent of do the 10 game conference schedule. And then you can still have that rivalry game that's out. And you can still have that lower tier team that you play, whether it's FCS or a lower tier ACC team or a lower tier Mountain West team or whoever it is that you want to play for your tune-up. It can still happen, but it will never happen because in the SEC, they don't want to go to an extra game if they don't have to. They're already complaining right now about making their schedule even easier, right? So there's just a lot of posturing to fit your own narrative when in reality, if you just look inward and you take care of your own business and you take care of yourself, you would still be playing right now, or you would have just lost and had your season just end.
It's a situation where it feels like there wouldn't have even been enough oxygen for anyone to complain a year ago. And yet here we are saying there's all these other problems. And then there's also an irony to it of so many of the people hemming and hawing and making the noise about schedules not being strong enough for certain teams were the ones getting employed by networks and carrying water for networks that was leading to all this realignment that was making these super conferences that was diluting the competition. It's
right.
You're all part of it, guys. It's like you can't call somebody else out and not think that you have a role in this too. So we will try to move past the college football airing of grievances, but it's time for all of our sports grievances of 2024. I have a handful. I know Schultzy and Ortner do as well. We want to hear yours on the fan text line 503-864-6326 and let us know on at 1080 the fan on our YouTube stream as well. We'll get back to an SOB Festivus edition of Primetime. But here's Schultzy with Sports Hub. Welcome back to a Festivus edition of Primetime, SOB edition. Schultzy, Ordner, and Buckley here with you. Isaac and Suk out on their Christmas break. I don't know much about how those guys are doing other than what I've seen on the social meds and that Suk got a brick put through the window of his car. That's really fun.
I feel like he's got a nice Festivus then.
He definitely has an airing of grievances, and if he meets the person who did it, there might be a feat of strength as well.
I was going to say, that is not the guy that I would put a brick through their window, and I'm a large guy.
I'd almost feel bad for the person putting the brick through the window if Suk caught them in the act, but we don't have to go there because Suk didn't. He just got a passenger seat full of shattered glass, and that stinks. So I doubt anybody who did that is actually listening or even has a radio, but that's a big bummer, and
they might now.
The big man's car is doing a little bit better. So let's move on to our airing of grievances, Festivus edition of Primetime. There are plenty, and there are many coming in on the fan text line from you. I've got a handful that I brought to the table. One of them is just all of the bitching about the college football playoff. As I was telling you in the break, mm-hmm. I think that you can identify there might be some things that are worth reworking or fine-tuning without saying the whole thing sucks.
Yes, because it doesn't suck.
We are four games into this brand new shiny thing, and everyone's already saying it's broken. Okay, the first round might not have been perfect, but you're getting a lot of great games in the quarterfinals,
yes.
funneling to the best true champion you'll have ever had in college football, and it's not going to matter that Ole Miss and Alabama weren't there for it. As much as I would like Oregon to not be an underdog in their very first game as a one seed, I'm not going to complain and say that this whole thing is stupid. It's not. We don't even know that yet. So that would be one for me. But then additionally, let's see where to go here. The state of the NBA is one for me, and this gets brought up a lot on this show. There's a lot of weird directions that you can go with it. There's a lot of reasons for where we are, but in general, mm-hmm. I think load management has been a big part of it, not knowing for sure who's going to be playing which nights and not seeing the star players regularly in the lineup, I think it's tough for people to follow. It's not like baseball where you play it in series and you know you're going to see the number one starter, right. Every Saturday or whatever it's going to be. But there are too many games that not enough people care about, and that hurts the sport overall. The owners will never say we need fewer games because that means less revenue for them. The players will never say I need to play all 82 because that means their bodies are breaking down and maybe they're not getting paid. And then you combine all of that with the guys who are the best athletes. We need to fast track to the NBA. There's not, and you could say this in football too, there's not as much development professionally as there used to be. And so guys just kind of get there and it's like sink or swim. And it feels like there's a lot of dudes who could be great players who are not NBA ready and maybe never get NBA ready. And on top of it, you have the Steph Curry effect, which I enjoyed the absolute peak of, but the whole three-pointer revolutionizing the game and every team taking 40 threes a game, even if your three-point shooters suck, it's not good. I don't want to say it should be reserved for someone special like Curry or like Peyton Pritchard, who's now lights out now, mm-hmm. but when entire teams are doing this, and then on top of it, the best players aren't even playing, I don't really know where you go. My grievance would be is the NBA is not as fun as it used to be. There feels like there's not as many star players. Yep. The games aren't as competitive. It's just in a rough spot.
I feel lame saying this, especially as the young guy on the show and at the station, but I don't like the style of play. Like, sure. The style sucks. I get why they do it, right? Like, you watch the Boston Celtics. They just won an NBA championship. They were in an NBA championship series that they just lost a couple years before that. They have the best young American player, probably the best duo of young players or relatively young players in the NBA right now. They have an absolute unicorn in Kristaps Porzingis. Their bench plays hard. They have two guards who actually play defense and are really good at it. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, and you have Al Horford, one of the better NBA players, like, from a likability standpoint.
You have a beautifully constructed team.
It's beautiful. And Joe Mazzulla is a crazy person. Yeah. He's legitimately
and wildly entertaining.
He wants to get choked out all the time. Like, that's his goal. He's like, I had a good day today. I'm going to make sure that my jiu-jitsu instructor puts me in an arm bar and breaks my arm. That's what he wants to do. They should be must-watch television. And I hate watching them play because all Jason Tatum is going to do is if he can't immediately get to the basket, he's going to dribble around the three-point line. They're going to kick the ball around until they find someone who has a semi-open three-point shot, and then they're going to chuck it up, and they're going to play the law of big numbers. If they shoot by their averages, they're going to win more games than not, but the product isn't fun. Mm-mm. Guys aren't trying to figure out that mid-range jumper, right? If it's not working for you, you don't just keep chucking up threes because eventually they're going to go in. It's a finding of who's going to be open in this spot. Hey, my shot isn't going today. I'm going to play stronger defense, mm-hmm. or what have you. The style isn't appealing. Like, it's weird, but the college basketball version of basketball is worse, much worse.
God, the fundamentals aren't even there, yeah.
But I would say it's more fun because anything can happen at any moment. There's chaos. There's true, utter chaos in college basketball to where at the right moment, the perfect thing can happen for one team, and all of a sudden, they win on a last-second shot. Where in the NBA, it just feels like it is inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with both of you guys on this. The NBA, I feel like there's a couple of reasons for this. One, referees don't let players have fun anymore. I don't know if that's the directive from like Adam Silver or like rivalries kind of that used to be formed between, you know, Blazers and Lakers players. You know, Ruben Patterson self-calling himself the Kobe stopper back in the day. Like, that kind of stuff isn't allowed to happen on the court anymore, right? Because as soon as a glare is given, Anthony Edwards gets a T.
Yep.
And then on top of that, you highlight the less talented players that are being given millions to dollars, even though they're not ready. Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest reason for this, and there's actual facts behind this. This is stats talking, not just me blowing out my ass here. I'm saying that I do believe that the need to not just, you know, manage their injuries and not want to play every single game, but the need to be a superstar, not just in the NBA, but in life. The need to be a Hollywood star. Paul George, for instance, I don't know if it was through the first 10 games played or for his first 10 games played of the season, but in 10 games, he had 16 podcasts released in the first 10 games of this season. Go back and look at Paul George.
The new media, baby, yeah, led by Draymond Green.
And he missed some of those games with a leg injury. And no, you don't need your leg to talk. But what my point is that it is obvious that basketball is not at the front of these guys' minds. And guys, screw the amount of money they're making, but I think if you are a highly paid professional, that job should be at the top of your mind and should be your main focus. Am I crazy in that?
I don't think you're crazy. It's hard to, as you said, the podcasting and the injury thing is a tightrope walk a little bit, but in general, there's a lot of interest, self-interest in brands and things like that where like you mentioned, the product's not very good. We need to get back to that being at the forefront, perhaps.
And I think the reason also for the product, like, Schulze, you talked about people don't fight anymore. People seem to just kind of all be buddies. Well, that's because they are. Mm-hmm. They all played the same AAU circuit together. They all played with the same teams, and someone knew somebody, right? Like, that's how it always is. Again, football, it's starting to get that way with 7-on-7, and I didn't play big-time college football, but I played big enough to where I knew somebody, or I knew somebody who knew that player. I knew, or I played against that player, right? Like, I went to a camp against that player, and that was high school football 10 years ago or so, 9-10 years ago, and that was without a 7-on-7 circuit. That I wasn't doing any of the O-line stuff. That wasn't really a thing back when I was in high school, and maybe it was, and I just wasn't doing it. But football is probably 10 to 15 years behind what basketball and baseball are doing when it comes to the middle school, high school, select teams. You're traveling around the country. You're playing in all these tournaments. And so I know what it was like when I'd go and play up against, you know, a rival team where it's like, oh, hey, I know that guy. I played against him, or I played with him, or he was at this camp and I met him at that camp and he was a nice guy, or hey, we went on the same official visit. So I can only imagine what it is for guys who went through the same AAU camps. They went through the same Rising Stars camps. They probably played on the same area team. Remember, most of these guys, when they're in high school, middle school, they don't play on one basketball team. They play on eight. Mm-hmm. They play on a bunch. And yep. Whenever they can get to the game or get to a practice, they do it. That's the other thing. No one really practices anymore. They just play a bunch of AAU games, which is great for like in-game learning necessarily, but it's not great for your fundamentals. So some of it too isn't even an NBA problem.
And often it's the exposure that's getting out ahead of the development. So right. it's like I'm being seen, but am I getting any better when I do get seen?
Because
like,
you know who get you know what gets you on that and one mixtape? It's that crazy three-pointer that you shoot with two hands in your face.
Yeah. Or it's you the getting guy who the bucket. Ankle drop and you tell him get up off the floor while you bust a jumper in his face.
100%. Like, think about it this way. And I know this isn't exactly basketball and it is an NBA, but it is the truth because it's out there. Dusty retweeted this. It was at the beginning of December. It was a legit thing. A 5-year-old put out a 7-on-7 team transfer notice.
I saw that.
Now that I say it, I think it was a 5th grader, not a 5-year-old.
Fifth grader, but yes.
Yeah, 12-year-old, yes. that makes sense.
Put out a transfer, I loved being on this team, but now I'm looking elsewhere. And that, while it is a bit extreme and a bit over the top, it isn't that far from the true mindset of most of those kids and people that age. And I get it, because you know what? You know what I wanted to be on? I wanted to be on the And One mixtape. I wanted to be on the Under the Radar Rising Star. I wanted to have my face in Northwest Prep Report. I wanted to be that guy. I remember wanting to be one of the top athletes at the Nike regional, the opening, you know, all that stuff. So I get it. I'm not that far removed from it. But I also understand that in the long run, it seems to be detrimental. And right now the NBA has a pure talent issue and they have a pure watchability issue. And you can say, hey, the talent is better now than it was ever before. And I agree with you. But I don't think that the talent is being used in the best way to get the most viewers. And if you're not getting the viewers, then why does it even freaking matter?
Alex Caruso just got a 4-year, $80 million contract. Dude averages like 6 points a game. Yeah, he's a defender. He fills up the stat sheet a little bit. But like, we are giving so much money to no talent. And I'm all about guys getting paid. But like, it's jumped the shark. It's getting ridiculous.
Well, and it's weird because you have this situation where it feels like it's almost like the whole, like, not to get it like into too deep into like fiscal policy and things like that, it's getting into the too big to fail realm of like the subprime loans and like all the money that's out there. The networks gave the NBA and their teams way too much money for the amount of people that are watching these games, and now there's all this extra money to go around and make all the coaches, players, and league partners fat and happy, but the product sucks, and the networks are going to have, I mean, they can't roll that back now. They've already committed that money. I don't know how it collapses, and I'm not saying it's going to, but that's kind of how we got here. Let's get into some other airing of grievances. Lots of yours coming in on the fan text line. Want to get into a couple, including Mariners, Blazers, got a couple football ones as well. There's plenty to go around on this holiday Festivus edition of Primetime. We'll get more of your grievances on the other side on 1080 The Fan. Let's get back to some more Festivus grievances. It's Schulze, Ortner, and Buckley here on an SOB edition of Primetime. We are airing our sports grievances for the year, as Seinfeld would have us do. get to our feats of strength a little bit later in the show, but some of your grievances coming in on the fan text line include, let's see here, my Festivus airing of grievances is the dissolvement of the Pac-12 and Oregon State getting screwed. Yeah, I hear that 100%. It has been a really, if anyone's got a grievance this year in the Northwest, boy, you can make an argument for the Mariners fans, for the Blazer fans, but the Cougs and the Beavs, they really were on the wrong side of the shaft this year. And yeah, I will hear all realignment Northwest sports grievances. That's really rough.
I can't wait for the 30 for 30 or the sports documentary that really gets the answers in about 15 to 20 years and tells us about like the dissolvement of the Pac-12, because obviously we know that there's some people to blame. A lot of people want to blame Larry Scott. A lot of people want to blame Klyuchkov. Some want to blame different ADs. That one professor that was like, no, you guys should make 50 a year, not 25 or 30 or whatever ESPN was offering. And I just want to know all the nitty gritty to it, because there's so many different conflicting stories and so many different avenues, and everyone's trying to protect their own skin so they don't look like the biggest idiot. And obviously Oregon State and Washington State are always going to play the victim, and they can because they are. I just want to know, like, as close to the truth as possible. Like, I need Bill Simmons to take it upon himself or another similar documentarian of that type of ilk, where it's just like, no, we're going to get the true answers and figure out what happened. It's going to be a great documentary when it finally comes out.
The weird thing about those, I agree with you. Those power brokers, they operate in such tight, quiet circles. It's unbelievable when they have their own interest at mind, when people have their own interest at mind, it's amazing what kind of secrets people can keep. And I think the writing is on the wall there for a lot of us about like how it came down and why it came down. But the people who are like, were essentially the ones to put the final nails in the coffin, we're not necessarily going to get that, because I think people are going to cover each other's asses on that. And I'm with you though. I absolutely want to get that aspect of it, because it's a story that needs to be told. Another one on the fan text line. We had, now it moved on me, but I'm looking for it. The Mariners. Schultzy, I know that you can get in.
I can chime in a little bit, sure.
So, and I actually saw that ESPN published a list today of the 10 most frustrated fan bases in Major League Baseball of 2024. And second on that list, behind only the Los Angeles Angels, who squandered Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani, are the Mariners.
At least they're spending money this year. They just brought in Yusei Kikuchi, didn't they? Like, they're actually trying to make their team better on the free agent market.
So
Mariners are not.
So what they wrote here about them is the Mariners have four straight winning seasons and did break that two-decade-long playoff drought in 22, but then they missed the playoffs by one win in 2023 and one win in 2024. With Chairman John Stanton once again holding a line on payroll, the Mariners are running lower payrolls than they did 2016 through 2018. President of Baseball Operations Jerry DePoto's hands are tied. That hasn't stopped him before, but so far the Mariners haven't made one major league transaction other than letting Jorge Polanco and Josh Rojas go. Meanwhile, the AL West is the most winnable division it has been in years. The Astros won the division with just 88 wins in 2024, traded Kyle Tucker, and might lose Alex Bregman too. Now is the time for the Mariners to pounce and add some offense. Instead, it is silence.
Yeah, it's kind of that point where preparation is supposed to meet opportunity, and the great pitching staff, the historically good pitching staff that you've built up, who are still under arbitration, and a couple are just coming off of their rookie deals, which is $500,000-$700,000 a year. It is an incredibly opportune time for the Mariners to use money that they will have to use on these pitchers if they want to keep them in the future, to spend on free agents. But they keep crying poor. Last two seasons, they've told all their fans, hey, guess what, guys? You know what? The TV deal's not working out. Revenues aren't really working.
But 54% is pretty good.
It's above 500.
If they would have won 54% of their games this season, then they would have been in the playoffs. So, hey, maybe DePoto's onto something. I'm kidding. It's just an extremely frustrating situation as a Mariners fan, because I know what they need to do. Every fan out there that watches, you know, any game during the season basically can figure out what they need to do, and it's just care a little bit more with their pocketbooks. And they're not.
The texter here said that it was the Mariners penny pinching that is their grievance. Second, all the NBA alternate jerseys, an underrated aspect of all the overall watering down of the product. I should know which teams I'm watching when I turn on the TV. That's a good grievance.
That's so true. That is
all the throwbacks, all the city editions,
all the weird.
Is it Denver who has the red one? Like, There was a game where it was like OKC versus Denver, and Denver was wearing like a red jersey, and OKC was wearing like a green jersey.
They all now at some point wear a color that is not any part of their base color.
It's dumb. I get what they're doing. I get why the NBA does it. And here's the issue. They're going to keep doing it because we're going to keep buying those jerseys. It's the same thing with the Mariners. They're going to keep penny pinching because people are going to keep going to games. And people have been paying attention to the Mariners probably more now than ever because they are so close to being a good team. They just always seem to fall short. And it's going to be one of the more frustrating, I think, things as a Mariners fan. And I think it's going to be more frustrating than missing out on the playoffs for 20 years or whatever it was when they waste this pitching rotation. Because they're going to waste this pitching rotation. And you have six legitimate MLB starters right now, and they're going to find a way to waste it because they won't spend it on players. And you also went out and you got, you know, now you drafted him, but you got Julio. You drafted Julio and you locked him up for the rest of his career. And it just feels like you are going to waste everything.
And this is 8 years after DePoto said, we can't wait for that time where we are going to be able to get more creative in free agency with this freed money. And then as soon as that opportunity comes, step back. It's like your parents promising you they're going to take you to Disneyland. And then when the day comes, they're like,
they take you to Six Flags?
No, they say, Timmy, I'm sorry, we're going to take you to Enchanted Forest. It's way worse than Disneyland. Enchanted Forest, like, the hell am I doing here? Why did I pay to come to this?
A very simple airing of grievances. An airing grievance is asking if Die Hard was a Christmas movie. People get so passionate about the answer. My answer is, I don't really care if you watch Die Hard on Christmas. I'd rather not watch it on Christmas. I'm sure Schultzy will have an opinion on it, and that might be fine, but a Christmas movie should be one of love and cheer and not just one taking place on Christmas.
I'm going to quote one line from Die Hard. Now I have a machine gun. It is a Christmas movie, okay? And
might not be your favorite, but not...
Yeah. Yeah, we should.
So where do we draw the line on Christmas movie then?
You called Home Alone
ancillary or whatever.
Die Hard is a fringe one as well.
Die Hard's more fringe, agree with
because
that.
Here's my thing on that. Before you all come to the station with pitchforks and knives, if it is a Christmas movie, it should be about Christmas. So I would throw, like, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is about Christmas. Or the one with the heat miser and the cold miser. Mm-hmm. Like, those are about Christmas. The Santa Claus, that is about Christmas. A movie like a Home Alone, a movie like a Die Hard, that's going to be on the fringe for me because it is a movie that is surrounded by Christmas.
The plot isn't specifically Christmas.
But I'm not gonna hate on you for calling it a Christmas movie.
But I think
hate on you not calling it a Christmas
movie. To Will's
point,
you could have an office building taken hostage at any point during the season, just like a family could leave their kid at home at any point during the year.
Well, you could have a big fat jolly red guy on your, you know, like, or a guy in a red suit on your roof at any point of the year too. Come on.
Gonna take a pause on some of these grievances as we get back to some football at hand. The Ducks now know their opponent for the Rose Bowl. It's the Ohio State Buckeyes. Want to get Will's thought on that matchup after the Buckeyes absolutely rolled the Tennessee Volunteers in Columbus this weekend. But then we will get back to your grievances. We'll get Stockwatch and we'll get into In the News. It's all coming up on an SOB edition of Primetime 1080 The Fan.